Hey again, Chad and Christy, your host for our Theme Parks and Recs podcast, episode 29 today. And today we are definitely going to super serve all of the people who are fascinated by the history of Disney. And the person that is joining us for this episode of the podcast is a historian. She has done decades of research on the history of everything dating back to the very, very beginning for Walt Disney and all of their animated movies. Her name is Mindy Johnson, and she has a new book out called Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation, which a lot of people may not realize that some of those original, if you go all the way back to Snow White, we have mentioned this before, that our son, who is an actor, his manager, her mother was one of the ink and paint artists for Dopey on the original Snow White movie, that there were a lot of women behind the scenes that were contributing to all of those movies that we still absolutely love and adore to this date. And she did her research. She has put out a fascinating book called Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation. And she promises to share a ton of history and little tidbits to Walt and Roy and everything Disney. So we'll go ahead and welcome her into the podcast, Mindy Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Welcome to Florida.
Oh, thanks so much. Glad this worked out. Apologies for the late delay, but so glad it worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an exciting time with the International Festival of the Arts kicking off this weekend. Always a fun event to go to. Is it your first time coming down for this?
No, I was actually here last year for the inaugural festival, and but the book wasn't quite out yet. So now that it is, we're here to do it upright. So it's really a wonderful event.
And I know you're going to have so many people that want to come up and talk to you about this, the diehard Disney fans like the two of us that not only love the theme parks, but just all of the stories and the history and how it all began. And for you to work so diligently to put out this book now that talks all about the ink and paint department of those early, early movies that we still love to this day, and specifically the women that were behind animating them, is just fascinating.
Well, to be able to shine a light on some of the things that these women of the ink and paint department that they innovated, how great to be able to do that.
Well, it was pretty remarkable. And what's exciting is quickly I learned, you know, as I was digging into this further, women really were everywhere. We think, we certainly know of the nine old men of Disney's animation, but women were there from the very beginning. In fact, the very first employee of the Walt Disney Company was a woman. Her name was Kathleen Dollard, and she was essentially the beginning of the animation team at Walt Disney Studios, or Disney Brothers at the time.
Right.
And, but it was exciting then to sort of continue forward. The book covers about 100 years of animation herstory, if you will. But it really explores where women advanced. And what's exciting, a wonderful discovery, is to learn that Walt was actually very progressive. He is the first to be on record in Hollywood to say, look, if a woman can do the job, she gets the pay.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He was, as far as advancing women into different divisions, he was among the first, or a lot of feminine firsts that within the world of animation, and even in Hollywood, that occurred at Disney Studios. So it was really exciting to sort of make these discoveries and undo many of these myths and assumptions that we've been laboring under for so long.
So what got you first interested in this particular story?
Well, an earlier book that I did on Tinkerbell, The Evolution of Tinkerbell, it was wonderful to discover that the actual original model for Tinkerbell was an ink and paint girl. Her name was Jenny Mack. And she posed for Mark Davis and the other artists for a pixie they were planning on Tinkerbell for Peter Pan. And there were other women who were brought in for different aspects, but Jenny was the original. And what's exciting was, I needed to know how, you know, what was the unique colors of Tinkerbell? How was she created? How was, you know, to get that magic glow and her pixie dust on screen? And all of that magic occurred in the realm of ink and paint. And it was astounding to me after I finished that, that no other book really explored that. And I thought, maybe there's something here. So when I pitched the idea, both my editor and myself, I'll admit it, we thought it would be this charming little book about tea cakes, and they would take their tea breaks a couple of times a day, and we thought it would be this cute story of pretty girls who traced and colored. Well, I got about 6 months into my research and called the editor and said, this is an epic story, and I have no idea where it ends, and it's incredible where women were and how they progressed, not only in ink and paint and the advances that they made in color and paint and cell application, but also in animation, in editing, post-production, story development, concept artists, music, virtually every area except, yes, directing. And we still sadly have that problem today. But pretty remarkable to find these stories and find these women and their families going back to the teens and 20s, as to where, not only in Disney animation, but certainly prior to that even. So sure. The book really covers a wide swath, about 100 years from the beginning of cinema. People don't realize it was actually women who were hand-coloring silent cinema. So it's a really an epic story, and I all throughout the book, it's broken down, told chronologically per decade, but I tried to pepper it throughout with where women were in larger society and what they could or couldn't do or what the advances were at that point. So it's a real drive-through look at history, her story.
One of the things that I love that when we had the opportunity to meet you out at Walt's Barn in the Burbank area over the Christmas holidays, well, first of all, it was amazing to see you there with all of the women that were able to attend that were of some of the ink and paint women. That was very special. But the thing that really struck me when we were talking was how you had said that at a certain point, there was a woman that really was behind the innovation of color, that she came up with the idea and said, hey, we can do this, after a lot of the men animators really had felt like it couldn't be done.
Well, when the studio made the advent into color animation, this would have been 1932 with the Flowers and Trees. Color had been out there, certainly in hand-colored silent cinema, but and there was the two-strip Technicolor process. It was a three-strip Technicolor process, and Hazel Sewell oversaw the team of the, they were called tracers and opaquers at that time, initially beginning as blackeners, and men were actually in this division as well. It was Hazel who said, the women are better. Thank you very much, but the women are better at this. And because when you think about it, what that role is what we're actually seeing on screen. The men with pencils, the animators, who we love and adore, and their work is brilliant, is strictly a blueprint, essentially, their idea, their movement, certainly we're seeing, but the actual facilitation of it, we're seeing a blueprint, their pencil sketches. And it's the women who come in with the fine artistry of, inking, calligraphic inking, and then the painting, but also the visual effects. And there was also a division, and people kind of laugh at this, but it actually was the case. There's paperwork and nomenclature of color animation, and it's where women developed adhesives so that pastel work could adhere to the cells, and there were women then who were moving the color, literally. A good example of that is Snow White's cheeks and her highlights in her hair. There's a lovely myth going around that that was makeup, but it was actually a dye technique developed by the woman who ran the paint department, Mary Weiser. She's another just an incredible trailblazer. She said, look, the paints, we're having a problem with the paints. We can do better. They were using materials from, painting houses and from hardware stores, trying to get the palette that they needed. Mary said, no, no, we're having too many problems. It's causing production delays. We can do better. So she spoke with Walt and Roy and Hazel, and they said, great. She learned chemistry. She took it upon herself and built and designed and created the first and only paint lab specifically for animation.
Now, I wonder if there's a correlation between, you said her name is Hazel Sewell?
Hazel Sewell.
Okay, is she...
original,
is she,
yeah, you're on.
Is she related to the Imagineer Bob Sewell, who, you know, Mr. Sewell is one of the tombstones in the Haunted Mansion?
Well, actually, you're close in that she's related, but she was actually related to Lillian Disney. She was Lillian's older sister.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And when Lillian came down from Idaho, she was staying with Hazel and her husband Glenn and their daughter Marjorie. And Glenn's sister, who was Blanche Sewell, who was one of the leading editors in Hollywood at the time, she was a top editor and moved over to MGM, became Louis B. Mayer's top editor. Blanche would, when Walt was courting Lillian, Hazel would make these incredible chicken dinners, and the running joke was, is it Lillian or is it Hazel's chicken dinners that kept him there? But what I was able to verify through Hazel's granddaughter was that Blanche, who was living with the Sewell family conclave there at the time, was also sort of schooling Walt on his editorial content and storytelling. So she had rather large impact, and was there's a great classic story of Blanche and Frances Marion attending a screening with Louis B. Mayer of an early Mickey Mouse before Steamboat Willie, trying to get the Mickey Mouses sold, and Louis B. Mayer kind of running from the room because he didn't think women would want to watch 9-foot-tall mice.
Hmm.
But it was Blanche Sewell who was really a tremendous impact on Walt and his early storytelling, as was Margaret Winkler, who gave him his start. It was a woman who sent the check to say, I think we can do business, and got Walt started with his Alice comedies.
Right. And you can touch, for those who want to see a little bit of this backstory too, there's a movie called Walt Before Mickey. I don't know, you probably have seen it. Which I thought was fascinating, too, for those that really want to go delve deep into that history of how it all began and the progression from the early, early cartoons that he did up until those movies that are now iconic, you know, the Dumbos and the Snow Whites and all of those. Was there one particular gal that you talked to when you were putting this book together that had the story of working on one of those films where it just kind of blew your mind, like, wow, I can't believe that I'm getting the inside scoop on this story?
There are a couple of ladies, sadly we lost one of them, but we still have one with us, who are still with us, who had worked on Snow White. And that, to me, as soon as I found Wilma Baker, who's in the book, she was, they called her the Shadow Girl. She did shadow painting, which was a unique art within itself. And Wilma was young. This was her first job. She had started on Snow White. And to sit down with her and to sort of get an immediate sense of what that was like to come in. And this is when they were pulling, you know, 12-hour shifts, 24 hours a day to try and get this film finished.
Sure.
And Ruthie Thompson, who is still with us today, she is 107 years young.
Wow.
And, yeah, incredible. And so crisp. I had the great joy of bringing Ruthie to the Motion Picture Academy. We had in August of this past year, did an incredible evening called An Invisible History, Trailblazing Women of Animation. And with Ruthie and a handful of other ink and paint ladies in that room that evening, we had at least one woman representative of having worked on every Disney animated feature film ever, from Snow White beyond Moana. And you can't, unfortunately, you can't say that of men and their roles, but to have Ruthie in that room and Marge Champion in that room, Marge also was the live-action reference model for Snow White and went on and had a stellar career in dance and motion picture and television. And both of those ladies were there that evening. And Ruthie, when you know, she actually was in the Kingswell storefront studio on Los Feliz when it was Disney Brothers Studios.
Wow.
She was a young girl in the neighborhood. I tell the story in the book. She was about 10 years old, kind of walking past the storefront, going to school, what you doing? And Walt and Roy would be out front, go on in, we're making cartoons. So she would sit next to Roy when he was putting the cells on the camera. And they'd have to, like, Ruthie, I think I hear your father calling. It's time to go home. No, she didn't want to leave.
That's so precious.
Ruthie is a treasure, but then came back later on. She's actually in one of the couple of the early Alice comedies. And then came back about 18, 19, when Walt and Roy were playing polo. They saw her and said she was working at the local polo area with the barns and the horses. And they said, Ruthie, what are you doing? You need to come work for us. So they brought her in. She worked in painting. And then later in the 1950s, Ruthie was among the first women in the camera union.
Wow. All
so
because of the
Disney.
She's
a remarkable story, yeah.
It just how your paths cross and your life changes. It's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, yeah. She's, I think, probably one of the biggest kind of pinch me people that when I got the opportunity, I've known Ruthie for years, but to really sit down and get her story was just remarkable.
And for the people that have not had an opportunity to ever meet one of the Disney legends, I think that we've been very fortunate in that I'm a fan of the Imagineers, so I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of the original Imagineers, and the overwhelming consistency amongst them, and I'm sure the ladies that you talked to for this book too, is they are all so humble. Even the ladies we met at Walt's Barn said, I don't understand why people want my autograph and want to take a picture with me. And it's just because the legacy you're leaving for billions of people is outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, that's what makes this a real joy to tell this story. It's been unsung for so long. And as women, we aren't, geared necessarily to be tooting our own horns. So it's been a real joy and honor and privilege to tell their stories. In fact, I get very emotional about it at times.
Well, it's easy to do because Disney in itself is an enigma. It is something that we all get emotional over, whether it is the parks or the movies or the history. It's just, it's unlike anything else that I can put my finger on when you have that in common with somebody, you do have your own story that is so emotional to you.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that as these women's stories are told and heard and understood, and as we come to know their accomplishments and contributions, it balances out our full understanding, and it makes us appreciate even more just how special these stories and animation experiences and park experiences are.
Mm-hmm.
There were women from the very beginning in Imagineering, and I include that, the women of the early days of the park and the World's Fair, Alice Davis.
Sure, Mary Blair.
Burns and Mary Blair and Leo Toombs and Joyce Carlson. And it's really a rich and incredible side of the story that we've been missing for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So in any aspect of not only Disney history, but pop culture history and 100 years of the last century, we've really only known half the story. But this has been a great opportunity to balance things out a little bit.
Right.
And to get the fuller picture of just exactly how these treasured experiences and characters and stories have come to life.
And now to come down to Florida and be over at Epcot for their Festival of Arts they do every spring, and meeting people and signing books. Is there generally a number one question that people ask of you, like that you get consistently?
Well, let's see. When you see the book and you see how big it is, how long did it take you to do this? And in many ways, the research is still continuing. The book itself was about 5 years.
Wow.
That's stemming off of other research I had been doing and other writing I had been doing. But the biggest challenge was the fact that, and again, I hold great respect for my colleagues and their incredible work. But if you go to the index of most of the books out there, you'll see the same three or four women, and it's mostly men. This side of our past has never been explored. It's minimally been explored. So this really was an effort to kind of aggregate and find these women and their families. Sadly, a lot of these women have passed, but to get their stories. And so it's dense, it's thick, it's rich, but it's also still a mere scratching of the surface. Mm-hmm. There are still new discoveries going on, and so I've got several other interesting projects in the works.
That was going to be my final question, is what was next, but I won't make you reveal the secret.
Well, there are certainly more stories to explore and really incredible backgrounds for some of these women and where they either... that occurred in their lives while they were working at Disney or alongside, for example, Gracie Godino, who was a remarkable painter for 40 years throughout the industry, not only at Disney but other studios. She was Rita Hayworth's double on a lot of all of her films. So whenever you see a Rita Hayworth film and her back is to the camera, that's Gracie Godino, who was one of the leading artists at Disney.
There you go.
You have so many. Kay Sumner, she stood 6'3" tall, very tall gal. She sort of garnered fame while working on Snow White. They did stories on her called "The Giant Girl Who Painted Walt's Seven Little Men," and she wrote a little article about the challenges and trials and tribulations of being a 6'3" tall as a girl. And as a result of that article, a number of people responded. And so she, for the first time, she met with about four or five people who said, well, I'm 6'5" or whatever. She could finally look up to or look eye to eye with somebody. And she's in the book and you can see the pictures of her. She's fairly tall. But what's interesting about her is as a result, she started the first, and now there are international tall people's clubs because of her while she was working on Snow White at the Hyperion Studios.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
they give out a scholarship in her name every year.
Wow.
Here's the footprint that I think that your book is going to leave, especially in the climate of where we have been in 2017 and now into 2018. It's not only celebrating the women, it is highlighting the teamwork that the women and men did together throughout this huge history. And I really feel like it's a blueprint for us to go moving forward and saying, hey, let's all work together. Let's collaborate. Let's focus on each other's strengths, because we all do have our individual strengths, whether we're women, whether we're men. And the thought of how we collaborate with one another, regardless of gender, regardless of background, and focusing on that positive, that's what I think the legacy of your book is.
Well put. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a privilege. It's been an honor. It's a joy to share this with readers and audiences, you know, as you're sitting there working at your computer for how long, it's what you, the end result, the end goal. And it's been a real joy to see people shift their thinking, shift their knowledge, their understanding a little bit because of this, to see these women shine and to get their stories revealed, and to see new generations, young girls, people, you know, parents getting the book for their daughters, say, look, you can be doing this too. We still labor under some rather outdated and outmoded beliefs in terms of what our world can be, and I just am grateful to have had a small part in hopefully shifting that a little bit.
Well, I know our daughter sure enjoyed meeting you, and we're all coming over as a family this weekend to Epcot to be there for the opening of the Festival of the Arts. So I know we're definitely going to want to swing by and say hi to you while we're there in person once again. And we didn't have a chance to get a copy when we were in Burbank because we were flying home and knew we already had so much in our suitcases. But I did see the last time we were at Epcot that the book was at Mouse Gears, the big shop there. And I'm sure it's all over all of the parks that people can pick up a copy of Ink and Paint.
Yep. I'll be signing, speaking today at 1:30 over in the Showcase Pavilion for Epcot Festival, and then signing following. I'm signing tomorrow night at Disney Springs, Art of Disney. And then Sunday, I'll be back at the festival doing a more in-depth workshop. And that's really, boy, if you have any interest and want to know more, I'll be delving quite a bit deeper into this incredible changing story of it will forever change what you thought you knew about animation. Wow. And so I look forward to seeing everybody. And again, it's just a tremendous honor to be telling this story. And I have my pens ready. I'm ready to sign books. So come on out, say hello. Looking forward to seeing everybody and sharing this incredible story.
Terrific. Thanks, Mindy. Have fun this weekend, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thanks so much, Chad and Christy. You guys take care.
Take care.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.